Drive-Thru HR, Brian, William, and Nisha, coming to you live every day, Monday through Friday, 12 to 12:30, and we are definitely the number one HR show out there. So let's get to our guest, because he is definitely going to enlighten and inspire today. This is going to be great. So Jared Olson, welcome to Drive-Thru HR.
Hey, thanks so much, Brian. I'm really happy to be here today.
So if you would, introduce yourself to our 750 million listeners, approximately.
Geez, no pressure, right?
No. I mean, you get a billion, that starts to get a little scary. It's 700, three-quarters of a billion. That's just a big weekend in Vegas. So if you would, introduce yourself.
Yeah, you bet. So I am very rooted in the state of Utah and have grown up here and had several really good positions in human resources that I think have allowed me to get to where I am today. So I started in human resources because I speak Spanish fluently, and I was working in sales for a construction company, and it was when the housing market was doing really well, and that construction company had a framing and install division. And so there were lots of applicants that were coming in looking for work. And since I was the only one who could really speak to them, I spent a lot of my day recruiting, doing onboarding, employee relations, and answering benefit questions and so forth. And so I got to the point where I said, hey, let's just make this a full-time gig. And that's kind of how I got into HR. And from there, I just fell in love with it. I reported to the safety manager at the time, so it was total trial and error. Really had to spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to develop my leaders to be better with this division because they didn't have a strong background in HR. And then from there, I went to the largest privately owned company in Utah, the gentleman who owns the Utah Jazz and our baseball team and movie theaters and restaurants and dealerships and so forth, and was able to help oversee their training, and we implemented a culture and a leadership courses that helped develop our leadership team to empower our employees to be more successful and to involve our guests as they come into our location to feel a little bit better about themselves. And then from there, I hopped over to a national federal construction company where we did, once again, just work at different Department of Defense bases. It was a construction company, but I was able to really enhance my online skills because I'm kind of a young tech guy, and so I really like the involvement with different applicant tracking systems and HRIS and developing people remotely, and that's what I was able to do. Being based in Utah, we were in almost every state, and I was able to create the HR program pretty much from the ground up, and from there, it was just a great experience at being able to develop people without having that face-to-face interaction. And now I work for JCPenney, and we have 12 distribution centers across the nation. And basically, we supply the back room of the JCPenney stores with product. So if you were to walk in the back, you really wouldn't see too much in a store. It's because we act as that for them. And we have two smaller facilities, one in Utah, one in Washington. I manage all HR for them, so taking care of the leadership development, employee relations, fielding basic HR questions, talent development, and so forth. I'm also involved with SHRM pretty heavily. I'm the chapter president for our Salt Lake chapter, which is a large chapter. And then I'm also have a strong presence on social media, so I love being out there and sharing great HR practices and principles. And I guess that's Jared Olson in a quick recap for you.
Nice. Jared, you said something in your opening monologue about trial and error. Do we ever get away, or should we ever get away from trial and error?
No, I don't think we should. I mean, I think that's what makes employees so engaged is they have the ability to really experiment, right? That's what people love about the Google model and culture is that they give 10% of every day to their employees to do whatever they want to. And they encourage them to fail. The only follow-up to that is make sure that you learn from it and fail quickly so that you don't do it again. But, no, I think we constantly need to have that trial and error experience so that we can really identify ourselves and know what we can do to make ourselves and our companies better.
You know, I was interviewed this morning about this situation that came out of the TechCrunch Disrupt last week and about a guy getting fired for his tweets, et cetera. And I said, you know, common sense isn't that common anymore. And we talked a lot about that, but I wanted to get your take on what should we teach? Like, as an employer, whose responsibility is it for common sense?
You know, that's a great question. I think it kind of comes down to two people. I think that the leadership team has some ownership on that, and then our employees have some ownership on it. And so maybe let me just give you my view on leadership styles, because I think that these different styles kind of speak to maybe answer that question a little bit. And I like sports, so I don't really follow any teams religiously, but I enjoy playing them. So I'll pose them in a sports scenario as well. But the first kind of manager I see is that of the micromanager. No one likes working for a micromanager. No one is able to use common sense when they have a micromanager, because that manager just takes it out of their hands and says, this is exactly what you're going to do. And I think of it as like a totem pole. I mean, you have a simple thing, you need to make a decision. Well, you have to go up one level of the totem pole to get approval, then they have to go up, and then they go up, and then it comes back down, and it takes days to get a simple answer. And so micromanagement style is definitely a bad approach. And if you apply that to sports, I mean, I just think football, if you were a micromanager on the field, then you probably would be like giving a piggyback to your quarterback, right? You're on them, telling them exactly what they need to do, when to hike the ball, when they need to throw, what plays to call, and so forth. So that's just a bad leadership style, and that also makes it difficult for the employee to know what they should do and takes the common sense out of it. And then the other style is out of the team player. And I think leaders really enjoy this because it comes across as a great approach, because what they're saying is, I want to participate with the team and we'll collectively come up to a decision together. And so if you have a business issue, you go into the boardroom and you say, okay, we're at point A, we need to get to point B, how are we going to do it? And they turn it over to the team, and they welcome their input, but the team generally doesn't say anything because the manager's in the room. And so they just look to that manager to give them the solution. So when it all is said and done, the manager leaves and says, man, that was a great meeting. We got a solution taken care of. I gave the opportunity for everyone to speak up. But when the employees leave, they think, man, I couldn't say what I wanted to say because my manager was in there at that time. And so that team player is, you know, a tough one. It's good in the sense that you're involved, but it still is a little too micromanaging. And if that was like a football team, then that would be kind of your coach being out on the field blocking the defensive line to take care of the quarterback. And I don't know if you've seen any coaches lately, but they're not really equipped to be out on the field. So that's a bad strike as well. And then the last one, the one that I like the most, is that of the actual coach. And that's where the coach is on the sidelines, empowering the people to make their decisions, teaching that common sense, and allowing the players to make their common sense as well. Because that way the quarterback can make their own plays. They can call what they need to. They can call it on the line and change the play if they need to and switch things up. And so that's if you go into a boardroom and say, hey, we're at point A, we need to get to point B. How are we going to do it? And then the manager leaves the room, lets the team come up with their own solution, bring in the common sense, bring in the innovation and the empowerment, and then they're able to really make the solution that they need to. And then the coach can, at the end, help however they need to. They're on the sidelines, willing to help, but they're not doing the actual work. And so I think that that's one of the ways, if you're a coach and you're on the sidelines and you're putting people in the right place and you're teaching them the right skills and pulling from their individual strengths, then you're going to have that common sense be there. Then that try and error will just naturally happen, and it will help the business be more successful.
Jared, on the kind of on the common sense theme, how do you coach, or how much do you get involved with your employees and individuals having kind of those more highly charged emotional conversations? Because right now in the workplace, there's obviously, because of world events, there's gigantic issues, political issues, that start to bring up a lot of those emotional subjects for people. And today, you know, especially with, you know, people freaking out with the shooting that happened in Washington, D.C. in the Naval Yard, you know, that just brings up a lot of stuff. Especially in September for the U.S. And so what do you do? Do you guys have things specially in place? I mean, is there things that you tell your team? Kind of what do you do to help with that?
Yeah, well, I think that the way a coach really is able to approach situations that are difficult like that are two ways. The first way is to have, like, in the moment conversations when things come up. And then the other is to have just real transparent, honest, heartfelt conversations that kind of take the place of that of a performance appraisal. And so those in-the-moment conversations follow a few steps as well. And that first step is really getting to the root cause of an issue. And so you talk about the kind of scary times that we're in right now and the dangers that we're faced. Well, what's really the root cause getting behind that? And you can find it just by probing. So there was this case study that I read a while ago that I really liked. And the case study was about what makes a dirty house. And so in the study, they found out that there's generally one room that sets the standard for the rest of the house. And that room is the kitchen. And it's the kitchen because it is where your family spends most of the time together. So you have dinner nightly there, generally, as a family. You're cooking in there. A lot of people have TVs in their kitchens now so that they can watch and be entertained as they're in the kitchen. It also is the one room that people want to improve the most for resale value. So kitchen is the most important room in the house. So why would you have a dirty kitchen? Well, the case study continued to probe to the root cause. And it found that the reason that a kitchen could be dirty is because there's dishes all over. Well, why would there be dirty dishes all over the place? Because you're cooking and so forth. Well, why don't you just put them in the sink? Well, it's because the sink probably is already full with dirty dishes. And so why do you have a full sink? Well, you have a full sink because you probably have a full dishwasher. Well, why do you have a full dishwasher? Maybe because you're out of dish soap, or maybe they're clean and you just haven't emptied them. And so getting to the root cause of a dirty house, this study found that if you have a full dishwasher, you're going to have a dirty house. And so using that kind of approach of just probing and getting to the root cause allows the coach to really understand what's the underlying issue here. So why are people fearful at work? Was there a comment made, or is it just the media and what's going on and hearing of shootings and some other things? Get to the root cause of it. And then once you get to the root cause of it, you have to explore the options that will help with possible solutions. So if you go to this the dishwasher situation, like, do you need to buy more dirty or more dish soap? Do you need to put soap on your shopping list? Do you need to schedule who's going to clean the dishes on what day and make a schedule? Or are you just going to clean the dishes as you cook? You kind of have to see what those options are. And when you're working with employees, you'll hear some good ones, you'll hear some bad ones, but I think it's important to explore all of them, because as you look at all options, the good and the bad, that will allow the employee to kind of see the full perspective. Because who's to say if you need to get from point A to point B that your path is going to be better than mine? The goal is to get to point B. So if you get there, the objective is completed. And that's what brings in that empowerment and that innovation, when you allow people to get there in their own path. But you have to explore what all the possible options are. And after you've explored them, you pick the very best option, so whatever the best solution is going to be for that situation. And this is where the coach can also give their input. They can still say, you know, we've explored all these paths. Is it okay if I share my idea? And then they give their recommendation to the employee, and then the employee is able to make that final decision. And then you set a time to follow up with them, and you see how it goes. What's the outcome of it? So if you've got someone who's nervous that the security is poor in your location because of things happening and we're reading in the media, well, let's get to the root cause, why they're nervous about it, what comments have been made, what are the ways we can increase our security, and then pick the best option and then follow up with them and let them know what the outcome of it is. I think that's a great way in the moment to work with employees. Any thoughts or questions on that?
Yeah, what about out of the moment? Meaning, you know, in the military they have this concept called clear intent, where, again, clear intent is then communicated. Here's what the objective is. Here's what we're trying to do. Whether or not I'm there or not, you understand the objective of the mission, et cetera. There is clear intent. If somebody dies, still there is clear intent on what the objective is. But what happens when managers aren't around and you can't bounce the ideas off them? You still got to make those decisions. And how much of that type of content keeps you up at night?
Yeah, well, actually quite a lot, because what we're kind of talking about in my approach of the team coach and how they handle those situations, I mean, it's a long-term process. And the end result, you know, you fast forward a few years down the road after you've got coaches in place that are following this approach at allowing employees to come with solutions, picking the best one and doing it, what that really does is it kind of pulls the coach out of the situation. So you don't have to stay up at night and worry, well, is this going to work or is it not? Because you know that your employees are wise enough, they know how to troubleshoot issues, and they know to pick the best solution so that they don't even need to come to you with the concern in the first place. So that totally keeps me up at night, because how are we going to get there? Well, I think it's, you know, it's a few years of a process in order to end, to get to that ending point. And it's just teaching those correct principles, showing the valuable options that are out there, and then helping those employees select what's going to make the most sense so that they don't always have to go to the manager to find out what the solution is. So it's not an overnight thing, I don't think.
Hey, Jared, let me do a quick reset. Everybody listening to Drive Through HR, William and Brian talking with Jared Olson. And Jared, have you, through your career, ever actually did a workshop or taught managers, employees, team members how to make decisions, literally teaching them different ways that they can approach, like a framework to their decision-making to try and make it better?
Yeah, absolutely. So in order to kind of coach employees through that and managers as well, is it kind of comes down to, first of all, understanding the vision and the mission, because that's going to be your overall guiding principle. So one of the things that I just love about JCPenney is how we're so focused on our mission. When we were founded over 100 years ago, it was on the fair and square principles, and it was the golden rule concept. And that's actually what we were initially called, was the golden rule. And so as we make decisions as leaders and you remember what you were founded off of, then you're able to pull and say, okay, what is the most fair thing we can do here, and how can we help our employees understand that this is what, you know, a fair and square thing that makes sense for the business, that makes sense for them as well. And you have to use that mission and vision statement as kind of your guiding light to influence you in the direction that you need to go. And then from there, it comes down to bringing in some creative ideas and concepts on how you can make correct decisions. And bringing in previous examples that have been successful to the business and in other locations. So a big company like JCPenney, it's really nice that we're able to contact other locations and see what's been successful for them and share those practices and best practices within our own locations, and then share those, what's working well with us, with other people. So I think this whole networking part plays in with managers as well, at reaching out, having a built network, and seeing how you can successfully help your employees bring in some of that innovation and help them accomplish the task that's at hand.
Jared, let me ask you about stigma. You know, I grew up in Texas, and great-great-great-grandfather fought for, you know, the beginning of Texas, the Republic of Texas. So I love Texas. Now, I'm also not a complete idiot Texas has a stigma. Whether or not we like it or not, we're a nation before we were a state. We have our own power grid. There's all kinds of wrought with problems and idiosyncratic behaviors here in Texas. But we have a stigma, some of which we manage, most of which we do not manage wisely, etc. Utah has a stigma. HR has a stigma. How do you personally deal with either the stigma of Utah or even the stigma of HR? How do you contend with the concept of stigma?
Well, I think that you have to be out in front of it. And I think you have to really understand, first of all, what the perception is so that you can address it with understanding where people are coming from and what their background is. And that's where I think also kind of that probing concept of getting to where that stigma is coming from is so important. But in Utah, you know, we're a bunch of LDS people. We're very church-driven and focused, where you have to know why people have that background and be able to combat it in the workplace as well. So that's an important part of living in the state of Utah is understanding that background. So you've got to be prepared for it. But then you have to stay in front of it and kind of be the leading edge of the technology portion for it. So one of the things that's been really beneficial, I think, for the HR profession is just our local HR community getting together regularly and kind of addressing what those current concerns and hot issues are within the area. Because there is that stigma within the state and within the profession that we have to know what's going on in different organizations, what's working for other companies and addressing those. And we really do quite a fantastic job with that, I think, within the HR community and with the way social media has come out to really help highlight some of these issues that are out there and the stigma. So reaching out to the community, having those networks built is a great way to really stay in front of it and address it before issues really arise. So I think that's something that's been real helpful for me, at least for in the state as well.
Nice. Take us into the world. Distribution centers are mostly hourly workers. I'm sure you have salaried employees as well. But take us into, and I don't even know if you're a union shop or a non-union shop, et cetera, but if you don't mind, take us into the world of what it's like in an hourly environment from an HR management perspective.
Yeah. So in a distribution environment, I mean, it's very driven by productivity. So it's about how many, you know, widgets can you produce, and the less amount of time you touch it, the better. And so from a hourly employee point of view, I think a lot of the concerns are based off of capacity. So what's their ability to be able to perform as much as we need to? And it's also maintaining their employee satisfaction as well. One of the key things with that is we are a non-union shop, and something we're very hard to continue to do by having this proactive relationship with our employees and finding what some of their challenges are in regards to productivity and just overall satisfaction. And so one of the ways we are able to stay on top of that through kind of our coaching model is to have monthly conversations with our employees. And it's where we sit down and have a very casual, transparent conversation that doesn't follow a script or anything like that, and it's just discussing how things are going. And when you're able to be honest with someone and tell them the good or the bad that they're doing, if it's bad, people don't like to hear it, but they're going to remember it if you're very honest and heartfelt with it and let them know that, you know, you really kind of seem like you're micromanaging right now. If you're going to say that to a manager, they're going to take it to heart and have a hard time with it, but explore why people might feel that way. And as you kind of probe into why that perception is there, that allows the employees and the management team to really be able and figure out the solution, how to change that perception, and how to work better with their teams. So having monthly transparent conversations, I think, are a critical piece of helping employees be more engaged and help them troubleshoot the exhaustion that they might feel from constantly being on their feet and working more with less. And just in our economy right now, I think that's a pretty common situation within a distribution channel that we're asking for more and we're not being able to give them the support that they need behind it other than having these conversations and controlling the few things that we can. You know, your fixed costs are always going to be there. But what can you do with those variable costs and how you can control those and help improve your employee engagement by using what you can control? So I think that that's kind of some of the similar challenges that are across just, you know, the nation right now within distribution.
Nice. Technology world, our HR and recruiting technologies, by and large, 90% of them are built for the salaried world, the salaried employer, in terms of recruiting, compensation, succession, payroll, you know, everything is mostly built for the salaried world. What have you found that really, and you can name names if you'd like or not if you don't, but what have you found when you're reviewing technologies that are that really take those nuances and understanding the hourly market? What have you found out there with, as you've looked at the technology world?
Well, I mean, of course, the most common thing right now that we're talking about within the HR community is just social media and the role that that plays in there as well. Because it really is an outlet for employees to be honest and to either promote your company culture or also to, you know, hypothetically, they could do some damage by talking about the negative things that are going on. But it keeps the HR practitioner on the tip of their toes trying to make sure that there's a good environment because social media is so relevant. And it's also such a great recruiting tool that I think is happening right now that not as many people are taking advantage on. So LinkedIn is very much more for the white-collared employee. But Facebook is, you know, you can attract your blue-collar workers that are looking for opportunities with within distribution or with an operation somewhere else. So I think that social media is a big player within that. And then applicant tracking systems are also a very important tool. Even if you don't have a strong background in computers, as a recruiter, I would probably pull my hair out if I wasn't able to use an applicant tracking system. Reviewing resumes that are handwritten and having people walk in, it just is so much of a distractor, and it takes so much time that you really need to have those applicant tracking systems. So whether it's a big platform like PeopleSoft or Oracle or something like that, or whether it's a smaller one like CatsOne, I mean, those still are good systems that I think even large or small companies need for white and blue-collared employees. And then your HRIS is still a critical piece in managing it, depending on your business size. But I think that HR technology works fairly well, whether it's a white-collar or a blue-collar employee. And I think that they mesh well together.
So, Jared, we've got about 3 minutes left. And what is the one thing right now, if everybody just stopped doing in HR, that you feel would improve the profession? That silver bullet of just don't do that ever again.
I tell you what I think they should do. How about that? What they should do is volunteer more. I think we need more people in the HR community out there promoting HR as a profession, and not being so, I guess, reactionary. We need to be more proactive as an industry at going out and saying, hey, here's what we really can do. Here's how we're being, you know, we're foreseeing the future. We're being innovative. We're being creative. We're being proactive, and so forth. And you can get that exposure through volunteering, whether that's through SHRM or ASTD or just local community opportunities. Get out there, talk about the profession, talk to businesses, especially small business owners who don't know what HR is, and help change the perception that's out there. So if my silver bullet of stop doing something is stop waiting for an issue to happen and be out there in front of your employees before something occurs so that you have that proactive relationship to stop fires from coming out. I don't like days when I call myself a firefighter and I put out fires all day, right? You want to be out there avoiding those from happening. And you can get that exposure and share with the rest of the business world what HR is doing if you volunteer more. So I think that's a very critical piece.
Well, and I appreciate your commitment to not answering my question because your answer was actually really good. So you're off.
Well, hey, yeah, you know, I try to avoid the questions the best I can.
You did the enthusiasm and commitment was overwhelming, so you did a heck of a good job. So one last thing, where can people connect up with you on the interwebs? And then we're out of time, man. Great talking with you.
Yeah, well, thank you guys once again. You can connect with me on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Facebook, Jared Olson, SLC for Salt Lake City HR. So Jared Olson, SLC HR.
Fantastic. Folks, we're out of here, Jared. I really appreciate your volunteerism with SHRM and the HR community. William and I are also, and Nisha are also very involved with that, big fans. So great job with that. Folks, we're out of here. We will talk to you tomorrow. Cause I never